This is a Geek Leader Podcast, and I'm your host, John Rauta. This show is all about helping us grow as leaders, become better technologists, and improve our lives both at work and at home. I hope you enjoy the show and learn a lot. Hello, world, and welcome to episode 211 of Geek Leader Podcast. I'm your host, John Rauta. APIs are the backbone of modern interconnected software systems. Join us at the API Live at Maine conference to ensure your APIs are flexible, functional, and user-friendly. Listen to expert speakers discuss API design patterns, effective development methodologies, and the latest tools for designing amazing APIs at the Live at Maine API conference. Go to geekleader.com/API for more information. Again, this conference is August 3rd, and it's free. Again, geekleader.com/API. All right, Geek Leaders. Today on the show, I've got Kevin McCarney, and he's the author of a book called Big Brain, Little Brain, How to Control Which One Speaks for You. And he's also an entrepreneur, been running his own business for many, many years, speaker, mentor, and he's had a lot of experience teaching people how to deal with people and teaching people how to communicate properly. So we're going to talk and learn about communication, which is one of the things that I've, you know, publicly said that I struggle with from time to time, how to be a successful communicator, and learning that transition between being an individual contributor to a leader has been a challenge, especially in the terms of communication. But with all that being said, Kevin, welcome to the show.
John, thank you so much. I really appreciate your podcast, and I really appreciate you taking the time to listen to me today.
If you don't mind, just tell the audience a little bit about how you got to where you are today and what led you to writing this book.
Thank you. I came from a very reactionary childhood. My father was a good man, but well acquainted with bottles with friendly sounding names. And not necessarily friendly in terms of what their outcome was. But we moved a lot because he had to change jobs. And so we moved 8 times before I was 11 years old. 5 different houses, 3 different motels, constantly in a different set of people, constantly trying to, I was number 5 of the boys, and we had 2 girls, big family, we're moving around. So constantly new environments where I've got to read people before I could even learn to read a book. And so that was a constant issue. And in a big family, you really have different dynamics with the parents and with the kids. And but I was always the mediator amongst my brothers and everybody else. So it's got to be, I was an observational position of being number 5. So as we grew up a little bit in a big family, you know, winning the argument is the rite of passage. That's it's like going out and killing the lion. What you're supposed to do is like, okay, now you're an adult because you won the argument. Well, what you learn about winning the argument is that you don't always win. You know, even if you win the argument, it doesn't really have the desired impact you thought it would have. And so as I grew into the working, and I started working early, I realized people are very much the same. And I started noticing patterns the way between people spoke. I got a job at Grauman's Chinese Theater in Hollywood in the early 70s. And so I was working there as a front doorman, dealing with all the people from the all over the world and the different circumstances that they were dealing with, always managing people. From there, I went to being a tour guide at Universal Studios. I thought, okay, this is cool. I just say the same thing all the time, realizing that every group of people was different and every set of interaction was very different. And I did that for a long time. And then I got into the hospitality industry, restaurants, and I realized that I became part of their training program. I started training people. And one of the things I noticed is that for big companies, training was an event. It was something, it was a check the box. Okay, we trained them on this, we're good. We trained them on that, we're good. Now let's move on. And what I started realizing that the event type of training doesn't stick. And it wasn't getting into the people. It's nice to have that event training, but it's more like planting seeds in a garden. You know, that's the event. You plant the seeds. Now you have to nurture it. Now you have to nurture these people and reinforce the ideas of what you're trying to get in that training on a daily basis. And that can't come with simply just a memo or something. It's got to be something where you're personally connecting with people on that. And so as I began to train and do all these things, I began to notice patterns from customers and patterns from my top execs. And there was a pattern of which that people communicated. And so I started looking at this in my own childhood. I could win an argument. I could get the situation, I'll win the argument. Even if you think you won, I won the argument. And I realized in the working world, I realized I was doing the same thing. I said, that's not working. I'm not getting the results that I want by winning the argument. And so, and it wasn't until this lady on a tram at Universal Studios, it was one of the beginnings of my focus on communication. It was a hot day. Everything was breaking down in LA. Buildings were breaking down. Trams were breaking down. People had to wait 3 hours to get on the tour. I was a tour guide. I'm sitting in a nice air-conditioned little office, and I get the message, Kevin, tram on the right. They're from Europe. They're not happy. Good luck. Well, yikes. I felt like I was being fed to the lions, right? So I get out there, and I'm super positive. I'm going, oh, you know, I'm going to make these people happy. And I walked along the tram. I tried to make eye contact, nothing. Arms crossed, brows furrowed. And we're not, you know, they're just angry. And so I go to get in my seat, and the head of their tour grabs my arm. He says, take us to our bus. We don't want to be here anymore. We don't need to be here. You just must take it. Just don't do this. Take us to our bus. And I said, sir, you're going to have to sit down because the tram's going to start moving. The driver started moving the tram immediately as I said that. He sat down. He says, fine, but we're not going to have a good time. You can keep us here, but we're not going to have a good time. And I said, okay, listen, I'll do the best I can. He said, no, we're not. You cannot make us laugh. So, and in my mind, I'm a snarky 19-year-old kid, right? Winning the argument is part of my DNA at that point. So I'm thinking, this is just another argument to win. I've got the microphone. I've got them, you know, on the tram for another hour and a half, and I'm just not going to give a very good tour. That's how I'm going to get back at them. Because one of the concepts between big brain, little brain, we'll talk about that, is little brain always wants to get back when something happens. And so in my mind, I say, okay, I'll just give a bad tour. Until the front row of the second car, I saw a family from the Midwest with their big red t-shirts from a football team from the Midwest that they were there. They'd been in the same sun. Bright red because they'd gotten sunburned, but with huge smiles on their face. And so this little island of people, four people, surrounded by 124 other people, that they were there in the same conditions, ready to have a great time. And it just struck me in a moment like that, instead of being a very negative or bad tour, I said, I've got to give these people the best tour I can. I'm going to give these people a great tour. I'm going to ignore all the negativity around them. And in doing so, 20 minutes into that tour, the rest of the tram started to come along. They started to have fun listening to the corny jokes and the spiels that I would be doing, except for their leader who stayed grumpy. And I was told there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
So we get off the tram. And the whole crowd just wanted to say thank you, and they had a great time. And I noticed the last row, the last car, and this is somewhat of a metaphor for understanding the moments and taking control. The last row, one of my supervisors is getting off the tram. So this has been a audited tour where they were seeing how I was doing. So imagine if the snarky 19-year-old had won that argument, okay? And so the family from the Midwest still waited for me. They came up to me and I said, you know, how are you? Whatever. And the father grabs me, says, son, you turn that group of people around. He says, they were not happy. And I said, I didn't do it. You did it. You gave me those smiles. And that gave me permission to give you a great tour as best I could. Because I wasn't going to give a tour like that. I was going to give a completely different tour because I felt like these people were just angry at me. And the mom grabs me on my shoulder. She says, we can't thank you enough. This is the only time we're ever going to be in California. And the fact that you chose to give us that tour just made our vacation. And what hit me with what she said, aside from the touch on the shoulder, is you chose to give that tour. I didn't realize until that time that I had just been living sort of a reactionary life. You know, four older brothers, you know, all these different movies around, you're reacting all the time. And so I realized, and again, I started thinking about it. I went back to the break room and I started telling everybody, and it was like an epiphany that, wow, I could actually, in the pressure of the moment, I could change. I could go in a different direction. I could choose to be somebody different in a split second. And so I've been studying communication a lot, and that was just one of the major lessons. And so as I started to see this pattern of the way other people reacted, I started to see how I was reacting to different mm-hmm. things. And so as I got more into it, I really started focusing on the nuances of communication. And then when I started my own company, we've been in business 37 years now. We still have the very first employee we hired. And I think that what I realized is that when I'm trying to teach people how to handle the pressure of the moment, situations where things are going wrong, because there's always going to be pressure of the moment when you're dealing with customer service, even when you're dealing with fellow employees. I had to come up with a way to teach them something that would stick, something that would if I could impart this idea upon them, that they would grasp it and be able to use it when they needed it. Because you can read a library full of books on communication, but if you don't have that information right at hand, right at the tip of your tongue, all that reading will have gone to waste, because in the pressure of the moment, you may say the wrong thing. And so I developed this big brain, little brain, and using some of the basic ideas of the brain science out there about the triune brain theory, the neocortex versus the mm-hmm. reptilian brain, and the limbic system with the emotions there in the middle. So I couched this in my training as you've got the reptilian brain versus the neocortex fighting over the emotions of that moment, because in that moment is when you have to choose which one you're going to use. And more often than not, when things are going great, we're always using our big brain. Yeah, everything is fine. It's just when things go wrong, when you get surprised, when you get, I use the word activated in the book, where, you know, something happens, you know, you get a big bill you weren't expecting. You get into a car accident. Somebody yells at you, something happens. And all of a sudden we feel like, oh, we've got to react back. And so as you begin to study some of this stuff, that triune brain theory came into focus. And so I just said, you know what, let's just focus on the big brain and little brain. We've got the reptilian brain that wants to say anything it wants to say because it feels like it. It's like, I have a right to do this. I have, then my 19-year-old snarky kid had a right to get back at this tour group because they had disrespected me. Mm-hmm. And what you realize is it's a natural part of what we go through. And so you see a lot of this get back every day, and we'll talk about that, but it really comes down to, no, wait a minute, you have control over that moment. I stayed away from the word trigger in the book completely, because trigger's sort of like something's already set in motion.
Yeah.
You can't do anything about that. Where I use the word activate, it's like sort of like, okay, the light's been turned on, but you haven't said anything yet. You haven't done anything yet. So you still have time to respond, which is giving it a little bit more thought before you say what you're going to say. So we all have different activators. I mean, I have at home, it could be the dog barking. It could be somebody not cleaning up their room. It could be, you know, somebody knocking on the front door who you don't know. So many different activators. Even at work, it could be the coffee machine breaking down. It could be the computer crashing. You know, these are all little things that activate. It's not really deeply and psychologically, but just that on the surface moment when it's just annoying, you know, they're kind of annoying activators, you know. And as we go through this stuff, I started realizing that I had to make this as uncomplicated as possible using casual language in order to get people to have it at the ready and their verbal quiver, if you want to call it that,
so that
they could pull it out and use it when they needed it.
So You kind of hit it on it and hit on it right here about the difference between reacting and responding. How is it that we can somehow control whether we're going to react or respond whenever a situation arises. Because in tech, sometimes, you know, you have like a server crash or something goes wrong that was unexpected, or someone deploys something that's not tested or not ready for deployment, you know, something bad happens. And our tendency is to, you know, tell the person how stupid they are and what they did was wrong. But that's not what we should be doing, right? We should be doing something a little bit differently. So how do we control that desire to react and respond instead?
Well, that's really what the entire book is about. And it's about what I introduce is a couple ideas. I introduce different ideas that might have different names in different arenas. But one of the challenges we have is to recognize that in the pressure of the moment, when those moments happen, I was giving different presentations to different groups. On a Monday, I was giving a presentation to a business group about this idea that I was talking about, and a big brain, a little brain. I could see some of the people got it right away, and visual learners and stuff like that. And some of the other people were asking questions like, well, but what if I'm not fast enough to get to my big brain? What if I'm not fast enough to get there? And so I started talking to them about different situations. Well, you could take time and, you know, the normal stuff. And then about 3 days later, I was given a presentation. I'd been asked to speak to a group of people who are being trained in culinary skills so they could get a job, who were coming out of prison. They were coming out of prison. They were being retrained and prep cooks so they could get a job in a kitchen as a prep cook. I was brought in to help them focus on how to handle the pressure of the moment in the kitchen. Because in a commercial kitchen, things will go wrong almost every single time. There's all you're dealing with is people and food and heat and knives and everything else. So, and I noticed the same pattern. The people of this business group, and then this group from that had gotten out of prison, some people got it right away. And some people, one guy asked almost the same question. Well, yeah, I'm not fast enough to get to my big brain. What do I do? And so I developed this concept called neutral, where it's a place you can go when the pressure's on, when you think you've got to respond so quickly or react so quickly. You can take just a couple of moments and go to neutral, but just going to neutral wasn't enough, because that's just like saying, okay, slow down. That's not enough. You have to give them something to do when they get to neutral. And so what we do in the book is we give them different things that they can do in neutral, because neutral is really an instant awareness that you're in a moment, that you're going to say something, and you want to take control of that moment. And neutral gives you that immediate perspective that you've got to take control of this moment. You've got to control the next words coming out of your mouth, because they're going to have a ripple effect in that legacy thing we talk about. And so neutral is is where you get to make a choice. And it's backed up by science. And I was given another presentation about 2 weeks later. So I introduced neutral to the whole crowd and was telling them about it. And it immediately hit, because people get it right away. And a guy comes up to me afterwards. So you need this quote, because this is your neutral. And it's from a man named Viktor Frankl. And Viktor Frankl was a neuroscientist, neurologist, and psychiatrist from the 40s. He survived four different concentration camps.
Wow.
Four, including Auschwitz. And he wrote 39 books on human interaction. And one of the quote he gave me said, between stimulus and response, there's a space. And that space is our ability to choose our destiny. It was, I'm not getting the words perfectly, but something like that. And the beautiful part about that was it just reinforced what I was trying to do with neutral. Because neutral is about making sure that you know, you recognize in the moment, you've got to take control. And so one of the things we do in the book, we have people use a neutral word in that moment to sort of a mnemonic signal to themselves, like, don't let little brain take over here. Because little brain is snarky, it's sarcastic, it's insensitive, selfish. Little brain, you know, just is very impulsive, and it's going to say whatever it feels like saying. And it may even feel like justified. Well, this person said that, so I get to say this. But we know better. As leaders, we know that that's not true. As leaders, we know that every word we have has a lot more power, because we're in a leadership role. And because we're in a leadership role, it has a longer ripple effect. So that's where we have to take control. So neutral is the idea of pivoting from where you are, from to realizing, oh, I've got to do something different here. And I think that the critical part there is, if we can train ourselves to and make our neutral stronger and bigger and give ourselves that little bit more breadth of thinking, because it's not just think before you speak, because that's not enough. And in the nomenclature of most psychological training, everybody talks about fight or flight. Mm-hmm. Well, fight or flight is true. It's absolutely there. But what they don't talk about, what they haven't talked about yet, is neutral. Neutral exists too. So you've got fight or flight. Now you've got neutral. So rather than simply choose one or the other, it's neutral is a sort of a conduit to the big brain, as I really call it, where it gives you that opportunity that you might not have had, or that you tomorrow you might think, if only I had said this, yeah. You know, if only I didn't say that, you know, it gives you that opportunity in the moment, in the pressure of the moment, because I deal with a lot of pressure of the moment situations in retail. And then in training, you can say people are constantly in the pressure of the moment.
Yeah, because people want it now, you know, or yeah. They want it fixed now. But going back to that neutral, so sometimes, you know, understanding that you have that option is really important. But also, like, to understand that your response isn't needed right now. You can always wait just a second or two and think. And having that pause, like, I know one thing that I always do before I get angry is one of the skills that I've learned along the way. Before I speak, I need to stop and say the words in my head as if I'm saying it to myself.
Yeah.
And figure out how am I going to feel if I hear those words said to me?
That's a really, really great way to put it, because feeling is what you're doing. You're giving mm-hmm. a feeling. And, you know, I've got 7 different principles in the book. One of them is control, tone, words, time, responsible, mm-hmm. power, and awareness. And within each one of those, there's different tools and traps that will happen along the way. And so what you're talking about, especially right now, is tone. Because what I talk about is that the tone is the message. As humans, we don't even know any words our parents are speaking when we're children. Mm-hmm. But we understand their tone.
Right.
And it's so the tone is the message. And so and we never lose that ability to differentiate between what the words are and what the tone is. And so you have this idea that you can say it, you can have the perfect exact thing you want to say, but if you say it in the wrong tone, it sends a completely different message. If you walk up to somebody and you go, "Wasn't that due yesterday? Did you need some help finishing that?" "Wasn't that due yesterday? You need some help finishing that?" Same exact words.
Yeah.
Completely different message. And this is where I think that people have to train themselves on how to tone their different expressions. And even if they're going to give a presentation or talk to somebody about something, practice that tone. You know, athletes spend 90 to 95% of their time practicing, and only 5 or 10% performing. And that's what we have to do as well. We have to practice a lot of the way we communicate and building up our neutral and getting our neutral words and phrases that we can use, because an athlete is constantly training, because you don't know the trajectory that the ball is going to take. You don't know what the day is going to be like. You don't know what the atmosphere is going to be like. You have to train yourself for all these different nuances of communication as well, mm-hmm. so that you're ready for anything. We give a presentation, the thing in the book under time, it's time parachutes, right? You're in the pressure of the moment. Somebody says something, they want that fast answer from you. Let me give that a little more thought. You know, let me think about that. That's an interesting point. But giving yourself that little bit of that time parachute, it goes with neutral. It gives you that time to grab a hold of that moment and decide, where do you want to go? Instead of being in that person's need to answer the question quickly, you take over with neutral and a time parachute, and you say, "Yeah, let me think about that." So, and it gives you the awareness that you're in a moment where you really need to pivot here and say something that you want to say, not something that you're being pushed to say.
Yeah, for sure. And I think people need to understand they can use that as well with email or Slack or any other kind of communications. You don't have to respond right away. You can take that minute to think about it or to type it out first and read it aloud or something like that. And, you know, I used to think that if I got a message, I had to respond right away. Otherwise, it didn't seem like I was working. But it's better to have a well thought out response than a fast response. And I think that's what you're getting at.
Well, you know, the send button that we have, a send button, right? Mm-hmm. The last three letters in that word is end. and so just keep that in focus, because that's you, it ends your ability to edit. It ends your ability to ever do anything with that, because that is on somebody else's phone. It's on somebody else's computer. It's on somebody else's voicemail forever. And as we now know, forever is a long time. You know, when I was growing up, before tech really became the world, you could have a past. But now your past is present every day. Your past is right in front of you. And that's that legacy that we talk about, is that ripple effect of what you're saying, which is why you have to take control now of virtually every word you say and every communication you have, because you know it's going to be out there forever. You know that somebody else may look at this differently. And you made a great point on the texting and that, and the immediacy of that. And the ability to take control and realize you don't have to give it back immediately. I always tell people, listen, if you get a text message, take, you know, especially if it's a negative text message or like somebody else's little brain texting you, mm-hmm. Then you could just take 20 minutes before you respond. You know, take whatever time you need to, because it's, you're going to get activated. Somebody, you know, pushes you or instigates against you or says something to you, you know, it's completely false or they've got the wrong perspective. The knee jerk reaction is, oh, I'm going to say this back to them. I'm going to challenge them. When if you give it that little bit of time, that neutral space, and especially it's easier to do with a text because you don't have to, the person's not right in front of you. And you can even just say, be back to you soon. Just take that time, take control, because the tech world has done so many wonderful things. The social media component of a lot of this has created an atmosphere in some people's mind, to your point, on the speed of everything happening, to where they feel like, oh, well, somebody tweeted this, I'm going to tweet that. And they feel this impulsive need. And I think that in some ways, social media is an enabler for little brain activity. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it's also something that connects so many people in so many different ways in a positive way. So it's just balancing that idea of what this tech can do, what it can do for me, and the traps that it might lay if we're not careful.
Yeah, I think traps is the very good word for that, because it can trap your time, it can trap your emotions, it can trap a lot of different things that you don't want in there as well. I know for me, one of the things that when it comes to, you know, communicating since COVID and lockdown, we've had a lot of virtual stuff, a lot of calls like this over Zoom where you're not in person, you lose some of that personal understanding of seeing someone face to face and understanding their body language and how they're moving, especially when they turn the camera off, right? When they don't have the camera on, you know, you don't have that visual effect of what's going on. Sometimes you have to rely on vocal tonality and some other things. And it's easier to do when you can hear the voice, but then when you go to text, you can't hear their tone in the text. You can only read it. So you're making up your own tone and whatever that message is. And I found for me that if I'm in a bad mood and I read even a positive message when I'm in a bad mood, I'm going to read it in that bad tone, as if they're being sarcastic or something that's not, you know, pleasant. But if I stop for a minute, go to neutral, like you're talking about, smile, and then read it with a smile on my face, it changes the meaning of that message altogether.
Well, you know, that's probably one of the most important things ever been said about this stuff, because you just use the word smile. Mm-hmm. And how do you smile in a text? You know, and emojis don't do it. Emojis, you know, they're not, it's not the same thing.
Right.
Personal smile. And Zoom has been a really good bridge for this time period. You know, it's been a good bridge, but it's still not replacing that ability to connect. And it doesn't really get that back, but it's been a good bridge. And I'm as we begin to have more in-person meetings, I think we're going to find the nuances of our communication skills maybe a little rusty. So we're going to have to work on them a bit. But to your point about smile, I'll train in retail. I train people, look, we may have a new customer every 2-3 minutes that somebody's got to deal with, you know, an order or something else like that. So we have a thing we call SET, S-E-T. The three things you need to start off with: smile, eye contact, and tone. You start with those three and you're set for that next encounter where you're controlling the tone of that encounter because you're controlling that. Now, it doesn't mean things won't go wrong. Mm-hmm. Things will go wrong. We had a lady come into one of our restaurants, and you've probably seen this, different ones, not this one, but different ones on the internet, where people overreact. And how do I train my staff to not follow them or try to one-up them? Because customers can sometimes be under different influences. We talk about alcohol as an influence, it has influence, but it's all different influences in our life. We don't know what's happening in somebody's life. The lady came in and she ordered an order of enchiladas. Okay. She goes with her friend. She goes to sit down. She comes back up 5 minutes later, and this is 50 people in the restaurant. She slams the enchiladas on the counter as loud as she possibly can. "These enchiladas are cold." Boom. It's like a little bomb, you know, went off. And it's like, whoa, everybody is now focused on the manager and this lady. And so the manager, to his credit, said, "You know, I am so sorry. I can't tell you. I will make some new enchiladas. I'll have them out to you right away. Please go have a seat and I'll bring them to you." And they do. They make a new order of enchiladas, and they take the enchiladas, they bring them out to the lady, and she says, "Fine." 5 minutes later, 6 minutes, same lady comes back up, slams the enchiladas on the counter and says, "You made these enchiladas cold." Again, pointing fingers. And so the manager looks at her, he says, "You know, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm just going to take the enchiladas off your bill. But more than that, I'm going to personally make you the enchiladas. I'm going to make them so perfectly for you, you'll love them. Please go have a seat and I'll bring them out to you." And he does. And as he's bringing the enchiladas out to her, he's saying hello. She said, "Fine," again. And he walks away. And he notices 10 minutes later, she hasn't taken a bite of the enchiladas. So he's thinking, okay, what's going on here? He walks back over to her. He says, "Listen, let me get you something else on the menu. Anything, it's on me. Because obviously these aren't pleasing you today." And he kept that tone of voice the entire time. Mm-hmm. Gets her some taquitos because she said that's what she wanted. And about 15 minutes later, she's taken one bite of one taquito, but he feels a hand on his arm, and it's the lady. And so he looks and she says, "Thank you." And everybody in the whole restaurant's watching this interaction. Everybody's watching this, and it's kind of a metaphor for life. Everybody's watching everything now. And he says, "You like the taquito?" He says, "No." He says, "Yeah, they were fine." He says, "I just came from the hospital. My husband's not doing well. I haven't slept in days. I haven't eaten in days. I didn't mean to take it out on you." And he just, they hugged each other and they said, "Oh, don't worry about it." And she ended up going back and sitting down and finishing. We don't know what's going on in people's lives when they're overreacting. We don't know the whole story.
Right.
And so in this particular case, the entire restaurant got to see the resolution that it had nothing to do with the enchiladas. And a lot of times in life, it doesn't have to do with the enchiladas and the moment. It really has to do with other influences in people's lives. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be having a tough time at work. Maybe they're missing a deadline. There's all these different things that people are activated with. And then they take it out in either a verbal comment or, you know, they let a verbal comment turn into a confrontation because they're not aware that they have an ability to pivot and switch away from that.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things we at work, you know, we let's say we're in the office, we see someone for 8-9 hours, you know, a day, every day for 5 days of the week, but we don't know what happens that other 20 some odd hours. What's going on at home? You know, are they having marriage problems? Is their spouse sick? You know, like you just mentioned in that story. And, you know, as leaders, we need to be aware that people could be in those situations when we're talking to them, when we're communicating, and understand that. I know for me, whenever someone gets angry at me when I've given feedback or something like that, I try to say, okay, in my head, you know, I'm thinking, well, this is not because of me. What's causing this? Or doesn't matter what's causing it, but it's not because of what I just said. So let's not react on what I just said. You know, let's take this to the next step. What are some other things that we can do to be aware or to try to remind ourselves that something else may be going on here, and it's not a direct response to what we just said or did?
I think one of the most difficult parts is not taking it personal.
Yes.
You know, and how do you train people not take it personal, especially when somebody's using the word you? you know, that's becomes more difficult. And so what we did in the book is we lined everything out and we set up tools and traps in each of these different categories and things you can control, things that your tone of voice. There's all these different tools and traps that you could use for or traps to be aware of. But one of the most important things, I think, is when you're communicating, you've got teams you're communicating with, is to be very mindful, as you were just of the employees, what's going on in their life. And you can do that with a conversation sometimes. And sometimes, you know, instead of a meeting, and the difference between a meeting and a conversation is the person doesn't feel like, you know, that they've got to have a result right now with the conversation. Mm-hmm. They're just having a conversation. And so what we do right now is we do periodic with everybody a coffee somewhere else. We go have a coffee with them so we can really begin to understand what's going on, because they'll be more free about what you don't want to sit in a conference room and say, so how's everything going in your life, and expect anybody to say anything really. There, it's got to be a different environment. It's got to be a situation where they feel like, oh, I can be free to talk here because I'm not looking at a statement on the wall that this is a company. So we try to get it out of the four walls that we're in and take it somewhere else. We even do walking talks, which I think are fantastic. Walking talks are just, they're incredible. They're miracles because it really allows people to focus on themselves and on that. So the walking talks is critical. In an environment where you've got so many people working in a company, I think one of the biggest challenges is rumors, because rumors are a silent cancer within the culture of a company, and that those rumors can get out of hand. And what'll happen is a rumor will become the truth unless it's taken care of. And so what we do is we have our managers, you know, focus on when the employees saying something nice when they're not there, because this is something where you realize a rumor is when somebody's saying something behind somebody's back when they're not there. That's how rumors begin. Some rumors begin. And so we put this to practice in one of our stores. We had two people that just were not getting along, been with me for 7 or 8 years, and they just all of a sudden they weren't talking to each other. Sat them down. Okay, what's wrong? What's going on? No, everything's fine. They just didn't want to talk, didn't know what was going on. I says, oh my gosh. So Patty, my partner's been with me now for 30 years. We sat this, okay, how do we do this? Because these are two great people. I don't want to lose them. I don't want one of them to leave. So we took the manager in this situation and we said, okay, you've got a meeting tomorrow. She's not going to be there because she's got a family function. I want you to think of three things you can say that she does extremely well, and they've got to be honest things about, and they can't be fake. Well, I can think of three things she doesn't. I go, okay, I got that. Yeah. All right. So that was that little brain snapping into the wrong comment. I said, now, but what are the three things she does really well? Well, she's always on time. Uniform's always impeccable. And she's really quick at what she does. okay, this is what I want you to do. I want you to, at the meeting tomorrow, I want you to go through all the matrix of what we've got to accomplish, where we're at with the numbers and all that stuff. But I want you to finish the meeting with saying, oh, you know what? She's not here today because she has a family function. But I just want to say that there's three things that I appreciate about her that she does really well. And mention those three things and end the meeting. No other conversation. So you end the meeting on that. I kid you not. I really kid you not. 24 hours later, he walks in, and from the corner of the kitchen that he hadn't heard from in a long time, Robert, how you doing? Oh, fine. And so this conversation that happened the previous day had already gotten to her, all right, that he had said something nice about her. And all of a sudden, her attitude changed about him because he had heard that when he didn't have to, not any real reason, but that he said something nice about her, and the ripple effect of that was unbelievable. Because what you realize is that good gossip is what we call this now. It's part of our training program. Is we want people to have a good gossip for everybody. When somebody's not around, I want you to have a good gossip. There's always going to be something good you can find. If you can't something find, sit down with me and I'll help you focus on it. Because the ripple effect with that was phenomenal. Because what it did is it taught the rest of the team that they can trust this person. Because he's saying something nice about somebody, and they know there might be some angst there, but he's saying nice about somebody when they're not there. And that ripple effect was building a lot more trust now in the entire team. Because without having to, without anything else, he had said something nice about her. And everybody started thinking, mm-hmm. What he says about me when I'm not around. But it gives them that encouragement not to go to the negative. Because lots of times when we don't have information, like in the text and stuff like that, we assume the negative.
Yes. Right?
We automatically assume the negative. And we talk about that in the book in a couple places, but it really was fascinating because as we began to train this good brain and big brain and little brain throughout the entire team, we realized that we're training them how to handle customers. Okay, you need to have this training because you need to know how to handle people when people are acting like this. You need to know how to respond. The interesting part about that is that the byproduct of that training was that they were learning how to handle their own life and how to handle their own perspective while they were training to handle other people. And so the byproduct of this was people who got along better and had a better focus. And if things went wrong, they had little tools that they could use to fix things. You know, we all say the wrong thing once in a while. We all use our little brains, you know, something happens and we snap, right? Oh, and so what do? You just leave it alone, forget about it. I think hopefully nobody noticed, because they did, and they'll register it. So the idea is you can go to the quicker you apologize, the less the negative ripple effect is of that moment. So if you can get a quick apology, you know what, sorry, I shouldn't have said that. That was the wrong tone of voice. That's not how I meant that to go. Boom. And all of a sudden you've gotten rid of the negative ripple effect there. And if you need something, if it was a couple of weeks ago or a month ago, there really is no expiration date on an apology. You can find, you know what? Remember last month we were in that meeting and said, I shouldn't have said that way. I keep thinking about that. It bothers me. I shouldn't have said that way. That means just apologize for that. Goes miles in the relationship. And since no matter what you're doing, you're in the relationship business, you know, you're in the people business. We're all in the people business. And the thing is that whether you're in retail or whether you're in tech or whether you're, in any other agency, you're really dealing with people you're either building that relationship up with trust or you're harming it by mistrust and doing things that will people trust you less. And the more trust you have, the more effective you're going to be as a leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a huge Trust is, you know, it's one of those things that once you've lost it, it's hard to get it back. So, the quicker you can apologize when you've misstepped, because we're all going to make mistakes. We're all going to say something we didn't mean to, and, always use the wrong brain from, at times, it happens. But when it does, like you said, apologize quickly. And I like what you said, that there's no expiration on an apology, because sometimes you may think, well, that was 2 weeks ago. It's a water under the bridge. I'm not going to bring it back up. But bringing it back up will show that you've corrected your ways. You've learned from that, and you didn't let it go. You didn't just hide it. I think that's important.
It really is. And I gotta tell you, there's a movie, if you want to watch it, that really helps people grasp this concept immediately. Mm-hmm. Some 20 plus years ago, Groundhog Day with Bill Murray. You ever seen it?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. It's a phenomenal movie. It's fun to be, and I always point when I'm doing presentations, I'll tell people, sometimes I'll have the DVD with me. I'll just go, Netflix has it, I think. The movie is about a very snarky little brain guy who's doing everything he can to make people not like him because he doesn't care about them. And so he, if you remember the movie, he's a weathercaster. And he comes in and he's treating everybody poorly, and he's telling, and all of a sudden he wants to get back to the big city, but he can't get back there because a storm system has stopped him from going. And so he has to stay in this town another day. He really wants to leave, but he can't leave because the storm system that, as a weather person, he had predicted would not come in. And so he has to stay there, and the day repeats itself. And day in and day out, and as long as he is using his little brain, he's not moving forward. He's not getting what he wants. He tries all these different insincere methodologies to sort of, because he knows what's going to happen that day. He goes in day after day after day. He knows what's going to happen, and he manipulates that day first. And it isn't until he's sincere and honest with himself, and in every moment of that day, that he gets to move forward with those relationships. The same thing for all of us, I think, with a lot of business relationships and other relationships. If we're not getting where we want to go, if we're not achieving what we want to achieve in any relationship, whether it's with a company or a person, we really have to take a look at the way we communicate. Because lots of times we're creating our own storm systems to be there to keep a, hold us back from where we want to go, because we're not choosing to take responsibility and for our own words and our own actions, but they are having that ripple effect that mm-hmm. holds us back. And I think that in so many ways, it's a wonderful film to watch with this perspective now. But I think it's something that we all have to take responsibility for our words and our actions. We're all held accountable much more now than we've ever been. Mm-hmm. So it's more important to have that ability to pivot in the pressure of the moment, to have those tools that you can use in the pressure of the moment. And, I tell people, look, I'm in the business of serving people at lunchtime and dinner time. I'm in the business of serving people with low blood sugar, right? Because they come in, they're hungry, they're starving. And boy, they're thinking about that one item on the menu that's the only thing they order. And if we get that wrong, it's not just that we got an item wrong. It's destroyed their day. And sometimes they're very verbal about it. So we have to really think about that interaction. Number one, let's make sure we get the order right. Number two, if something goes wrong, take responsibility. And it's not like the customer's always right. The customer isn't always right. But in the moment that you're dealing with them, they honestly believe they are. So don't fight that. Deal with that. And you take your time to listen. And all you have to do is listen for a little bit. By the time that customer leaves, they're going to be happy and they're going to be an evangelist for your brand.
Yep, absolutely. Kevin, thanks so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. How can people find out more about or connect with you and find out more about your book and where to pick it up?
Thank you. Well, obviously, and so everywhere you can buy a book, but bigbrainlittlebrain.com. And I've got a couple things there for you. I've got an activator worksheet, so you can make a list of the different things that activate you in your life, that are going to bother you, so that you can take a look at them and say, okay, when this thing just comes up, how do I deal with this? But whether it work, there's an activator worksheet you can download for free. And there's also a neutral graphic that shows you, put down your neutral words and practice them so that you can practice this stuff yourself and get better at it. Because my goal is to make people better communication so their relationships last longer.
Awesome. Well, it's been fun. I enjoyed it. And thank you for your book. I appreciate it. And thanks for coming on the show.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed that episode, please leave a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. I'd greatly appreciate that. And also, don't forget to check out merch. We have some t-shirts that I've designed that are on at geekleader.com. You can click on the merchandise section there and check that out. And also, don't forget about the books from our guests. So if you like this guest and other guests that have written books, please go ahead and check that out at geekleader.com. I would greatly appreciate it, and I'm sure they would too.